make it in time.
Mm.
So we have to find something different. The GPS. It originally said a week lead time, but now the expected ship date is August 11th.
That's not going to work.
No, it's not going to work. So they have to find a different GPS.
So I guess what I was trying to say is the one thing that I'm pretty clear on is, or maybe not, but seems clearer on, is that we can add features or attributes mm-hmm. to the attribute vector.
Right.
And that...
I mean, the goal, of course, of adding features to it is to eventually throw features off.
Right, because adding it makes
useless.
Makes the state space actually larger.
Well, again, it depends on what you use. I mean, for example, if you do something like support vector machines, I mean, that's explicitly what they do, because there's kind of a mechanism that says just build a function with some of them.
Yep.
Which means there is the learning has a mechanism built in that throws them away.
I see.
So you don't have to find out which ones are, it finds out. Now that's supervised, and for what we want to do, that doesn't quite work because you simply don't have data.
Right.
Well, you have past data.
Yeah.
But you don't have data of the task that you're currently after, I think.
Where do those attribute values come from, I guess, to be clear on that?
Well, okay, so they're different things. I mean, again, an attribute is just something you can put in the state vector.
Right. I think of it as just a discrete
set
of values.
It doesn't have to be discretized.
Right. True.
So the simplest is affordances and goals.
Yep.
However, you can also think of other things, like those common features you pull out. Those adjectives are potentially ones that can actually replace the primitive ones without throwing their important information away.
I mean,
like the, you have absolute position of the goal and absolute position of you can replace it with your relative position to the goal as one attribute.
Yeah, I understand that, but from what we were taking out, I don't see how you could get any attributes out of it because it didn't have any terminating nodes, right? There were no leaf nodes. So
right.
Those things by themselves can't actually give you an attribute, right?
No, actually they...
Or what would the attribute value be?
Okay, because they're... In some sense they can, but it's not overly practical.
Okay.
It could, in that, see, each set of values defines a particular branch. You could make those the values of the attribute.
The
branch itself.
The value of the branch, like which mm-hmm. branch you took
yeah.
could be.
Which of the branches coming out of it you end up in.
Right, that's what I mean. So, like if you pass in a state mm-hmm. space, it can at least tell you which branch you would take, even though
right.
it's not.
Now, again, it's more practical if they're actually tied to a functionality.
Right.
And that ultimately, I mean, I guess it goes into which ones are useful and how do you pull them out, including... I was actually thinking, I don't remember when. This was just probably been jogging somewhere. There might be a way to differentiate adjectives and nouns functionally.
How would that be?
How was that? One possible interpretation of the difference would be in terms of functionality, so that's kind of affordances, where an object itself actually has an affordance, which would really mean it contains the affordance leaf node. While an adjective does not have an affordance itself, or a function itself, but indicates the function in something else.
Right, so...
Which still means you can take an adjective and make
it
a noun out of it.
By just putting leaf nodes on the end.
Yes,
right.
Effectively.
So how do you pull out an object then? Because, well, at least in our initial thing, it was just what's the common structure, right?
Well, which inherently would be an adjective, except if you're pulling something out that ends up in leaf nodes.
Right. Well, I mean, common structure is pretty general, right? Like, whether there's going to be leaf
nodes. A question whether it has to end up in leaf nodes in everything you pull it out of.
Or just some things.
Or only in some of it.
Right.
But it's one possibility to say effectively what distinguishes an adjective and a noun is that a noun actually has functionality. And basically, a noun has functionality, an adjective can only be used to indicate functionality, but doesn't have it.
Right. That makes sense.
And that might actually be structurally identifiable.
Well, how would you identify it? I mean, if you're just looking for common structures, it's not really looking for adjectives or nouns. It's just saying this thing.
Well,
is the
except
same
that
as
you
this
could
thing.
You could look for common structures of two types. Ones with leaf nodes and ones without.
Right. Okay.
The way we're looking for it right now will most of the time give you adjectives. The problem becomes if they're starting to get mixed.
If there's some leaf nodes and some
if they're not in, if the noun doesn't encode all the leaf nodes, is that still a noun?
Right.
Which really means, does a noun have to indicate the functionality always?
And so in the case of color, for example, if it were pulling out the noun, there would be yes and no answers at the leaf nodes to say it was.
Well, the noun could have yes and no answers. It
right.
doesn't have to have strictly yes answers.
Right, because if it's
no
red,
answers.
Then the
right.
only one that's yes is red.
Right.
Right, or, I mean, but is there a difference between red with a single branch that says yes, basically the only, kind of like the, you know, the base case, I guess.
Well, I mean, if there's a noun that only ends in one type, then effectively it does need adjectives for that functionality.
Right.
Now, can you have an adjective that actually ends up in... I guess in principle, yes, but that gets you into this hybrid mixture of what is the difference between an adjective and a noun, because if the adjective has a functionality inherently... In some sense, an adjective per se cannot
yeah.
have a function.
Strictly speaking.
Because you need something to execute
right.
that function, so it
but
has
I guess
to be a noun.
What I was saying was something different was, so if I pull out the color structure, which we've seen, so there's unknown, there's red, green, and blue, right? And for the noun, in my head, I would think that if it was red, red would have yes, and the other three would have no. Mm-hmm. And that would be the noun red.
Yeah.
Now... What if there's just a structure which only has red, yes, with nothing else, or everything else? Are those functionally the same?
If there's a structure, red...
Where you start at its color, and then there's only one branch, which is red, and says yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's either no other branches, or I guess one other branch, which is everything else. Is that functionally the same as the structure that I am actually pulling out now, which has... four branches, one of which is red, green, blue, unknown.
Well, if you're pulling out just so I guess there's a difference between the adjective.
I guess what I'm saying is that
the category.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is that it seems like things could be structurally different, but functionally the same, right? Like if the only answer is yes for red.
Mm-hmm.
Then the rest of the structure doesn't really matter in a certain sense, right?
Right. Yes.
But so structurally, those things are going to be different, but the answers that you're going to get out of it functionally will be exactly the same.
Yeah, but now you're just talking about the structure of an affordance, right?
Yeah.
And that's arbitrary to start with.
Okay.
I mean, that's one of our things. If you're building this tree, I can reorganize that tree any way I want, and I get the same thing. I mean, it's just you're using a particular algorithm to build it.
Right.
Doesn't mean that's the right algorithm, actually. I think ultimately that's a question for pulling out adjectives, because one structure of the tree might completely hide it, while
right.
another one explicitly contains it.
Right.
And so again, one way to address this ultimately would be, or one way we could play with this is to effectively say, rather than trying to extract common structures from a set of trees, what you can do is you can take the trees, or more specifically, the data they represent, and try to build one structure for all of them together.
Yeah.
And that by itself will kind of try to keep joint structures together, because
right.
that's what it wants to do.
Yeah.
While if you do them separately, it might not. Now there's a question with this, like the adjective red, and the, I mean, see when we say an adjective red, we could say that's an attribute. It's a binary attribute, yes or
yeah.
no. On the other hand, what we would consider an attribute would actually be color.
Right.
Not red.
Right.
And I guess there's ultimately another question there, if that's actually a piece of structure we can find too. I mean, we could.
Well, take what you're actually finding is that attribute at the root, right?
Well, the problem is the attribute color is, again, it's kind of a question. It's a superset of all possible adjectives.
Yes. But that's, I guess, so it's an attribute category, or it would be a bucket in the vector versus
actual. Well, no, it's an attribute. And the adjective becomes its possible values.
Right.
While if we treat the color itself as an adjective, it's a binary adjective.
Right.
It's a Boolean attribute.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
A Boolean attribute.
Yeah.
There are significant advantages to one and to the other
mm-hmm.
way to look at it, even though, so very often people think that contains the same information. If you have an adjective, an attribute color, and the values are the individual colors, or you have an attribute for every color and it's
but it's
binary.
Different, because then you can have multiple colors.
Exactly.
Right?
They're really not the same.
Yeah.
In what they mean. Now, in practice, they might be the same.
Depends on...
Because simply multiple color solutions might simply not ever occur.
Right. But it's possible that you would have more than one
right.
of those booleans.
So for a
state
space construction, if you're offline constructing it, it actually makes a big difference. Which one you use. If you're online learning it, it might actually make much less of a difference.
Mm.
And that's simply because if you're online learning it, states that can't happen don't happen.
Right.
And so it doesn't really matter that they're theoretically part of your state space.
Right. Okay, now, for the purposes of, like, writing this paper, it seems like we keep coming back to saying that, or one of the things that seems interesting that might be doable, at least in the short term, is figuring out if any of these things make learning faster. Would that be something we would want to do?
Yeah, like, I think ultimately we definitely want to do this. Unfortunately, it's a tad tricky to exactly do this. So Meron did, in some sense, use that as a metric for deciding which of the attributes to keep in the state space. However, of course, just an approximation. And the reason it's difficult is there's multiple aspects to it. The size of the state space obviously plays a role.
Yeah.
And that's all he used.
The size of the state space?
Right. However, that's not entirely true. Things like affordances have, as attributes, have another big advantage that accelerates learning that the size of the state space does not capture. And that is, they make your problem more deterministic. Because your attributes are now predictors of the outcome, in some sense, you don't have random outcomes anymore in that state space once you take an action.
Or you have less random outcomes.
Yes. Well, I mean, so in a world where you get perfect affordances, you would have no probabilistic outcomes at all anymore, because your state space would now suddenly be 100% indicative of what's going to happen.
Right.
And so effectively, you would take the randomness out of the state space.
Yep.
In practice, that's not going to be possible, but it's still going to do a lot of that. The problem is it's very hard to offline make any assumptions about what that will do to your learning time.
You actually have to test it.
Or you would have to truly come up with a way, and that might actually be possible, but that's very complicated.
Seems easier just to build it. And
I mean, the reason you can do it with the size is that people have actually done this. There are probabilistic calculations. There are probabilistic complexities. They basically say that with very high probability to learn a value function that is within a certain bound of optimal on a state space of a particular side will not require more than a certain number of experiences.
Hmm.
And depending on your learning algorithm, the current results are such that it either scales quadratic or linear.
Wow.
The linear is kind of a weird algorithm because it needs full knowledge.
Okay.
But and the others need some knowledge, the ones that's actually proven for. But it's effectively some versions of, they're not exactly Q-learning. You have to do a couple of things to them to be able to make the proof possible. You can show that effectively that probabilistic bound is quadratic in the size of the state space. Now, this doesn't take into account that some parts of the state space might never be visited. It just makes the assumption all of them get visited about the exact same number of times.
Yep.
So there is no such thing as one part that's more important than the other. It also doesn't make any assumptions about how deterministic your problem is, because obviously, if you're problem is perfectly deterministic, you can learn linear.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you can potentially, well, I guess in the strictest sense, you can't go below linear because you need to compute a value for every state.
Right.
But the optimal algorithm would be able to do that linearly. Because it would just propagate from rewards backwards and you're done.
Yep.
Because there's no probabilities.
No.
So none of those bounds capture anything about determinism, and they are very, very difficult to do these proofs.
Okay.
They require pretty significant amounts of statistics.
Is it easier just to do it experimentally? And say, here's the results we got?
Yes, and you probably want to do that anyway. Yeah. I mean, formally proving it, it's kind of cool and it's incredibly difficult. I would say there are relatively few people out there who can actually do those proofs.
Yeah, I'm not one of them.
And who I would trust if they make the proof.
Yeah.
Probabilistic bounds. Because probabilistic bounds proofs are much more difficult than standard complexity proofs. Because again, I mean, they are saying with probability, they have a probability with which they can be wrong, and they have a probability, and they have a bound to which they have to be optimal.
Right.
And so they're pretty difficult to do.
So then, for actually sitting down and writing a paper, it seems like it would be useful to decide what it's going to be about, but also like what metrics we're going to use and like what data. I mean, because it seems like part of what we talked about last week too is you can almost kind of
I think you want to do two things.
Backfit.
You want to do how long it takes to learn, but also the complexity of the state space, just for a moment.
Yep.